people by police officers and the kidnapping of children at the border. I'm putting my hope in my fellow Americans who recognize that America's history is one that actually aligns with the Muslim ban, but that it is our work of challenging it that sets the course for the future. We need those street demonstrations as much, if not more, than we need additional good lawsuits.
That was Zahra Ballou, the director of the Council on American Islamic Relations. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Nishrin Abdulrahman, Helvia Taina, Anne Lee Herring, and Eileen Williams from the Stanford Storytelling Project, and Jake Warga. I'm your host, Salima Hamrani, and thank you for listening to Making Contact.
KABU has a tent set up at the Occupy ICE encampment in southwest Portland, where we are broadcasting and webcasting live reports from the camp.
Protesters have created a community of resistance since June 17th to protest the deportation and separation of families by the U.S.
U.S. Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE.
ICE, check our website for a schedule of upcoming broadcasts and listen to our past interviews at kboo.fm/OccupyICE.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying our habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals. I'm Dab Stedman, your host, and my guests today are Jocelyn Cole and Emily Recentes, who are local animal activists representing the Portland chapter of the SAVE movement. Thank you both for coming on the program today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay. For the benefit of those listeners who aren't yet familiar with the SAVE movement, let's start by talking about its history. So can you tell us a little something about its mission and why the SAVE movement was founded?
Sure. So the SAVE movement is a worldwide network of activists, and we have over 400 groups now, but it started in Toronto, Canada, when our founders, Anita Kreintz and her dog, Mr. Bean, were walking along Lakeshore Drive, and they noticed a truck full of pigs on its way to the slaughterhouse. And at that time, Anita was already an activist and knew about the slaughterhouse, but had never seen the pigs in the trucks before. So when she saw that, that really changed her when she bore witness for the first time. And since then, she, you know, promised to those pigs that she would hold vigils every week for them so that people would see them.
And so that evolved into the Toronto Pig Save Group then?
Correct.
Okay, great. And what would you say are the organization's main goals and objectives then?
Our main goal is to ask people to come bear witness with us. I can explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. But how did each of you become involved in this particular group and this particular form of animal activism?
We both went to the Veg Fest in Portland in 2016. And we came across a booth for the SAVE movement there, and we talked to them, and they were like, oh, you need to, we're trying to get people to start a chapter here in Portland, and because there isn't one around. And I had heard about the SAVE movement. I think Jocelyn had too. So it was definitely something we were interested in, and they were looking for someone to organize. So we jumped on it. Both of us were into doing
it. So there's a very strong link between vegan lifestyle and participating or the roots of this group. Can you talk about that connection a little bit and why, for instance, why veganism is so important as a foundation of your principles to this group?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we find that a lot of people who come to vigils are already vegan, but those who do not, they find that when they come to the vigils and they meet a pig, a cow, a chicken, whoever it is, that changes them in a way that they can't expect. And when you meet someone, it's like you're meeting a dog or a cat and you see them as an individual. You see them for who they are. And once we have that experience, it's something you can't forget. And so that allows people to, you know, start on this journey of learning about what we do to animals, why we do it, and that we actually don't need to do any of it.
So as a vegan and as a person with a good heart, you see each animal as a being of equal consideration as to any other being on the planet.
Yes, correct. And I think anyone would come to that conclusion if they let themselves think about it.
Okay. Do you have any idea how many animal lives are saved each year by one person following a vegan lifestyle?
There's a number that PETA puts out. It's like 198 animals per year. But really, when you go vegan, you're decreasing that demand for animal products to be produced into the world. Sorry, animals to be produced into the world, to be bred into the world, to die. So when you're purchasing other things and you're no longer purchasing animals and their secretions and their flesh, that demand is lowering and we're no longer bringing them into this world. We're sparing them. We're not saving them by going vegan. We're just not putting them on this earth to suffer and die for palate pleasure and profit.
Right. And by lessening the demand for animal-based products, you're also, and I know this is really integral to your mission, but you're lessening the suffering, the overall suffering of animals that are raised in these CAFOs, those concentrated animal feeding lots. You want to talk about the conditions that you know to be existing in those concentrated animal feed lots?
So we raise and kill 56 billion animals, land animals alone. It's over 2 trillion from the oceans.
2 trillion?
Yeah. It's a vast and very upsetting number to think about. You can't even comprehend it, really. And these animals are put in cages, for the most part, in buildings where they don't see sunlight, and they live very short lives. Chickens will live to like 6 weeks old, pigs 6 months, cows a year and a half, and this is a fraction of their natural lifespan, and they're spending it in crowded conditions, in conditions that they can't live free and happy in the way that they should, in the way that they deserve to live. So
I know one thing I saw in your brochure, which really pulled at my heartstrings, was the statement that for many animals, the first time they ever see daylight is when they are put on the trucks taking them to the slaughterhouses. Yeah,
that's absolutely true. And one thing we think about in conjunction with that is that when we're out there at a vigil and we're bearing witness, we know that, you know, these may be their first and their only moments of good emotions that they'll have, of mercy and compassion and kindness from humans that they'll ever know. So not only are they, you know, just seeing the outdoors and feeling the sunshine on their backs, but they're first knowing kindness from humans as well, and we think that's really important.
Yeah, important. Brief moment of connection, of a positive connection amidst an otherwise sea of misery and suffering. Well, since you are so strongly connected to vegan lifestyle, are non-vegans welcome to participate at your events?
Yes, absolutely. Everyone is encouraged to come bear witness. We feel that not only people, that it's powerful for people, but that we have the duty to bear witness.
Yes, and speaking of the concept of bearing witness, this is at the very core of this particular form of animal activism. Can you tell us what it means to bear witness, and can you describe how it's actually done?
Sure. So word for word, bearing witness means that when the suffering of another creature causes you to feel pain, rather than submitting to the initial desire to flee from the suffering one, rather on the contrary, we come close as we can to she who suffers, and we try to help. So that's the concept, and the way that we manifest that in our vigils is that we find ourselves at places where animals are suffering. So often we find ourselves outside of slaughterhouses, and when the trucks full of animals are brought in and those animals are about to be killed, we either try to stop those trucks or have them stop for us so that we can spend a few minutes with those animals to, one, make that connection, show them that kindness that they really do deserve, and also take photos and videos of them so that we can share them through social media and whatever other means out into the world so that people, no matter where they are, they have a chance to connect with them and see that they're individuals and see that they don't want to be in these trucks, just like you or I wouldn't want to be.
Definitely. Well, when you say you connect with them, I know I've seen some videos where some of the group members or people present were actually trying to offer water to the animals, because I know that often they are on these long journeys on these trucks without the benefit of food or water. So you provide water at certain times, and is there any other way that you comfort them, or how do you go about connecting with them, as you say?
That can really depend on the species. For chickens and cows, it's often hard to offer them water because cows, they prefer to lower their head like into a trough of water, which is difficult to do with a water bottle. Chickens is the same, and often they're very scared too. We find that most of the time water is offered to pigs at pig vigils, and our local group doesn't hold pig vigils as of yet, but I, for instance, was just at a pig vigil with Los Angeles Animal Save last night and this morning at 2 a.m. And we do offer water to these pigs. Sometimes they're traveling for over 30 hours water, yeah, without stopping. And they're coming, you know, from as far as Utah and other Midwestern states with no source of comfort, crammed together and in the sweltering heat.
In late June, I turned on the TV and there was a story about a truck that had been in a big crash just in Washington, a little bit north of the border with Oregon. And I think it was 5,000 were spilled out of the truck. You know, they had been in cages, but a lot of the cages broke, and they were just, you know, the footage of these chickens sitting there totally stunned was just, you know, so sad. And I wondered, if your group had been there, what could you or what would you have done?
Funny you ask. I mean, if we're talking about the same situation, that crash happened last Monday, and but they happen all over the place, but there was a crash that happened last Monday in Battleground, Washington, where a truck full of 5,000 chickens spilled off the road, and our activists heard about it. And we rushed, actually, we were on our way to another event, and instead we rushed to the site of this crash. And by the time we got there, police officers were already there. Workers from the slaughterhouse and the farm were already there collecting birds, dead and alive. And we were there trying to negotiate the release of birds. We already had multiple local sanctuaries who had agreed to take in dozens of birds and provide them safety and sanctuary and veterinary care. So we were there to try to liberate anyone and everyone who we could.
Did you have any success rescuing any of those birds?
Well, by the time we were there, as I said, the police were there and they were preventing us from taking the birds. There was one hen who was making her way up this ditch, up an embankment, and one of our activists took her into her arms and tried to walk away with her, but she was immediately surrounded by the police who demanded that she release the bird and give her back, which she refused to do. We tried to negotiate with the police as well as representatives from Foster Farms for about an hour. And while we were also bearing witness to the other birds, the survivors and those who had already passed. But after about an hour of this negotiation, the police just ended up ripping the bird out of her arms and arresting her and taking her to jail.
Oh, that's so sad. And I saw on the same TV news coverage some of the people who were collecting the damaged goods, shall I say, you know, we're holding two chickens at a time in each hand upside down and just, you know, without any tenderness or consideration for the fact that they were living sentient beings, just, you know, taking them from point A to point B to probably put them back into another cage. We're going to talk a little bit about the ag-gag laws when we come back and how they're affecting your vigils and the work that you do. But right now, we're going to take a very short break. So everyone, please stay tuned. We're back, and you're listening to Voices for the Animals on your community radio, KBOO Portland. We're talking with Jocelyn Cole and Emily Resentis of the SAVE movement in Portland about the relatively new type of animal activism called bearing witness. We were just speaking about the obstacles that prevent people, members from your group and other compassionate activists, from entering sites where farmed animals are kept, or in this case, we were referring to a bad truck crash on the highway. How do your members manage to bear witness given all these legal roadblocks?
Well, it is difficult. Depending on where you are and where you're bearing witness, people will stop trucks. Some of them will physically stop the trucks, and they have help from the police often, and even the slaughterhouse. Sometimes we'll wait for them to come to a stop at a stoplight or a stop sign, and we'll be able to see the animals and bear witness to the animals then. For us specifically, we have come across a lot of hardship from not only the slaughterhouse workers, but also the police in the town that we bear witness at, because these are billion-dollar industries. They make a lot of money. It's part of the economy. So there's, like you said, there's laws that are protecting them. The police are there to protect these laws, even though they are unjust.
Do we have any slaughterhouses in the Portland metro area? I know there used to be one in Central Oregon.
We go out to Woodland, Washington, mm-hmm. To bear witness, and then the Foster Farms in Kelso. I know that there's a small little butcher shop for game here in Portland, mm-hmm. But that's where we're going because those are the largest facilities that we are able to bear witness at.
I just said a minute ago that this is a new type of animal activism, bearing witness, but actually the philosophical foundation of this movement is really not that new at all, because it has its roots in the ideas of both Leo Tolstoy and Mahatma Gandhi. Can you talk a little bit about the influence of these two great thinkers on your movement?
Yeah, so our founder, Anita, is a scholar and an academic and a student of these great leaders of the past. And apart from the concept of bearing witness that is so integral to the SAVE movement, and it's our main strategy, what we do in our activism, another thing that those people that you mentioned, things that we learn from them, one thing that always stands out and is also characteristic of the SAVE movement is that we are love-based, and that love is the most powerful force on this earth. Martin Luther King Jr. said that love is the only force capable of turning an enemy into a friend, and that's something that we really strongly believe, and that it can be easy to think about, as it seems like a nice quote, but it can be more difficult to actually feel that on the inside,
I would imagine.
So, yeah, I think we find that a lot of activists can struggle with that, and it's something that we all struggle with in a different way, and it's something that I particularly am really interested in, and I think that the SAVE movement as an organization is interested in helping everyone, particularly activists, in learning about love-based activism and what it means to feel love in your heart, not only for animals, for fellow activists, but for slaughterhouse workers, for truck drivers, for people who have not yet understood the importance of going vegan and helping the animals. I think it's so important. It's something that I haven't fully grasped yet, and that we're continually working on.
Well, I think one thing that is quite unique and admirable about the SAVE movement is that the group adheres, I think the groups worldwide adhere to a set of very high-minded principles that are stated right on your website. You have a something called your Code of Conduct and a Memorandum of Understanding, which is shared by all of the groups around the world. And I think, as you said, there, how many now? Over
There are over 400
Oh my
now,
gosh.
And we're growing really fast.
Yes,
it's,
you are.
It's exponential.
Yes, you are. You want to talk a little bit about some of those principles in your code of conduct, because I do think that they set you apart from other animal advocacy groups. Not that other animal advocates don't follow these principles, but just the fact that you have put it in concrete and that all the members of your group know what type of ethical behavior is expected of them.
Yeah, I mean, you said it exactly as it is. So our code of conduct and our memorandum of understanding just kind of outlines how we expect our members to behave at vigils. So we go over this at the beginning of every vigil. We hold a briefing. So for those who are attending who are new, who don't know yet, they can understand the principles that we operate by and that we are love-based. So we talk to everybody about why we're there. We're there to bear witness, that we're not there to attack anyone at all. We're there to show love for everyone, and that any hate we receive is returned with love. So often we find at a lot of our vigils, people, we have high traffic, so people drive by and often say, you know, things that can be hurtful. They tell us to eat a steak, get a job, get a life, go back to Portland, all these things. And we don't respond with negativity. We don't engage with violence. You know, we just hold up a peace sign and we tell people to have a good day if they're not willing to engage in a conversation with us.
Well, that's very impressive, because I've been on the front lines too, and I know how tempting it is to push back and say things that you're just going to regret later on and that would make the walls go higher instead of bringing down the barriers between you and other people. So you mentioned that the SAVE movement is a very fast-growing organization with many members in many locations around the globe. Why do you think that this particular form of advocacy is so prevalent amongst animal activists now?
Maybe Emily wants to add something to this, but the things that come to mind are that, one, anybody can do this work, this type of activism. We see very young children at vigils and elderly people at vigils. People of all different backgrounds can come to the vigils. Vigils are for absolutely everyone, so that's one thing. It's very accessible in many aspects. And the other thing is that I don't think I've experienced any other form of activism, though I know that they all have their place and their importance. I don't think I've experienced anything that is quite like a vigil and quite like bearing witness, because I went vegan because of videos that I saw. But when I bore witness for the first time, that's something that I can't describe, and it absolutely changed my life. There's something so different about meeting someone in person rather than seeing them through a screen, because you're looking at them and they're looking right back at you, like through you, and asking you for your help.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how has participation in this intimate interaction with animals en route to their death at the slaughterhouse, how has that affected you both personally?
Yeah, definitely. Being able to look them in the eyes and know them and see them and show them that compassion is just very powerful. And it lights a fire within you to do something and to be active for them and to continue speaking up for them. And it makes you want to go back and see them again, even though it hurts. It's a very painful thing to see them and know where they're going and to be able to see the aftermath of it. But you know that you can show that to people and you can help them make that connection. You can bring people out and organize and show people that this is what's happening. It's really powerful to bring the people out and see, after you've been doing it for so long and you've seen it for so long, to see their reaction to it too. And it's like, this is how you're supposed to react to this. You're supposed to cry and you're supposed to want to speak up about it. And it's just a very, very powerful form of activism.
Yeah, you're bringing tears to my eyes right now. Yeah, well, I know that in your literature, it talks about Tolstoy saying that it is a person's duty to do this type of advocacy work, this type of connection, and not to run away from the personal pain that it might cause, that it's kind of a form of personal sacrifice to raise awareness and to bring about change in the world.
Yeah, I actually recently saw something from a fantastic activist named Brittany Michelson. She said that a lot of people will say that vegan activism is a passion, but really she sees it as an obligation. And it's not something that we enjoy doing. I wouldn't say, like, it's not something that we want to do. We don't want to have to speak up for animals. We don't want to have to advocate for people to see them as someone and not hurt them the way that we do. But we have that duty to do it because it's happening, and it's happening because of us. And we also contributed to it. Most of us contributed to it. So we have not only that duty to make right with them, but to make right with everything that we have done and everything that we are doing, and to help not only the animals, but the planet and the people and our hearts.
Yeah.
It hurts us deeply.
So would you say you feel that taking this type of action has made a difference in the animals' lives as well as in your own?
Absolutely. That's a kind of a hard thing, is coming to terms with the fact that you can't make global change right here and right now, and seeing those animals and knowing that you can't do anything for them at that moment is really heartbreaking. But when you're being out there and when you're speaking up and you're going out there frequently, and you're building a movement, and you're making real change, and you're just going to continue building and make more change for them. And soon, you know, we'll be able to make actual legal change and make it to where it's not an acceptable thing by law, and it won't be protected anymore. So I would definitely say.
Okay. And so when you're on a vigil or bearing witness, and sometimes there are other people around, do you pass out literature to them, or do you engage them in conversation and dialogue? And do you feel that others witnessing your bearing witness impacts their lives?
Yeah, I mean, it's different for every group and every location, because some slaughterhouses are really isolated, some are near high traffic areas. For us personally, we are in a few different places. So when we are near a freeway off-ramp, we get to have a lot of short conversations when people are at a red light. So we get, you know, maybe a minute or two to talk with them. But we find that those conversations are really powerful, and we're able to give them some information so they can go do their own research. But we have also received messages through our social media from people in Woodland, in the communities where we bear witness. And other states too. Yeah. Thanking us for being there. And I just recall one from a man who said that he used to be vegetarian, and we reminded him why that was the case, and that now his entire family is in the process of going vegan.
Well, there's a good case in point. Thank you. We're running a little short on time, so I will direct our listeners to your website so they can learn about all the other activities that your group does as well. But can you tell us how to get involved with the SAVE movement here locally? I think you have an email and a website address.
Yes, so the best way to get in contact with Portland Animal Save is to find us on Facebook or Instagram at just Portland Animal Save. We also have an email address, portlandanimalsave@gmail.com. And if you're not in the local area but you want to get involved, just go to thesavemovement.org, and that shows all of our groups all around the world.
Okay, just very, very quickly, are there any activities or any kind of events coming up in late July or August?
Yeah, so we do host zoo protests, because we want to be out there too. It's not it's about the whole system of using animals. So that's on July 28th from 12 to 2 p.m. at the Oregon Zoo. And just now coming up with a vigil, we can have one on July 25th. It's a Wednesday for cows in Woodland, Washington, from 10 to 1.
Fantastic. Well, we are out of time. Jocelyn and Emily, thank you so much for being on this program and telling us about the SAVE movement, and for getting out there on the front lines on behalf of farmed animals everywhere.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
This is Dab Stedman thanking all of you for listening to Voices for the Animals today. To hear any of our past programs, just go online to kboo.fm and look under audio programs. Until fourth Monday of next month, remember that you too can be a voice for the animals.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Stand by for the noontime jamboree. Come on, come on, come on, come on.
Everybody's your neighbor on this one thing you can rely.
Da, 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 da.
Oh, they'll all come to see you, and they'll never ever leave you, saying, y'all come to see us now and by. Y'all come,
y'all come,
y'all come,
y'all come.
Oh, y'all come to see us when you can. And y'all come,
y'all come,
y'all come,
y'all come.
Oh, y'all come to see us now and then. Kin folks coming, a coming by the dozen, eating everything from soup to hay.
Da, 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 da.
And right after dinner, they ain't looking any thinner, and here's what you hear them say. Y'all come,
y'all come,
y'all come,
y'all come.
Oh, y'all come to see us when you can. And y'all come,
y'all come,
y'all come,
y'all come.
Oh, y'all come to see us now and then. They'd come to the kitchen and help do the dishes right away.
Da, 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 da.
And as they're leaving, even though she's grieving,